So we've mentioned that if there is a double parsha, or if there is rather some kind of reason why we don't read the normal Haftorah, we're still going to stick with the regular Haftorah as part of our program this year, because we want to consider it in the context of the parsha. Happens to be that we have a rare opportunity this year that we actually do read the Haftorah for Parshas Mishpatim, if I'm not mistaken. And that doesn't happen so often, because Mishpatim is very often Parshas Shkalim, but because it's a leap year, so we have the extra month, and that pushes Shkalim down. And also, if it's not Parshas Shkalim, it's often Rosh Chodesh or Machar Chodesh. So it happens a lot that the Haftorah for Mishpatim doesn't get read. So this year, we actually are reading the Haftorah, so we've timed things well. And it's a unique opportunity to be able to contemplate the Haftorah of Mishpatim together with Mishpatim. And it is instructive, because it gives a very specific focus to the parsha. If you read the Haftorah, it seems pretty clear what the connection is to the parsha, but it provokes questions about the parsha itself. Now, we know that the parsha is titled pretty descriptively. Parshas Mishpatim does indeed include many of the Mishpatim, many of the guidelines Bin Adam L'Chaveiro. In particular, all of what's relevant, or a lot of what's relevant to our Masechta this year, so we have that opportunity as well as we go over the Parsha to Chazer, beginning of Bava Kamma. So that's a particularly meaningful experience for us. Although it's also the case that there's much that's been Adam Malkum in the Parsha as well, and maybe we'll talk about that a little bit later. But certainly the Mishpatim have a very dominant presence in this week's parsha. And it's always striking that if we're going to talk about various Bin Adam L'Chaveiro mandates, that the first thing that we come up with, the first topic, is the topic of slaves. That opening the parsha with Eved Ivri, certainly a striking choice. And the Haftorah emphasizes it, because the Haftorah is about Shiluach Avadim, is about setting slaves free. And it's clear that that's a parallel to the Parsha. It's clear that the Parsha and the Haftorah connect on that theme. So, as it is, we're always struck by the fact that Mishpatim starts with that, out of all the different concepts in the Torah, that Eved Ivri is the opening theme in Mishpatim, is always by itself striking. And then when you read the Haftorah with it, it really emphasizes that that seems to be a highlighted theme here, and that itself is very interesting. And therefore, it seems indicated that we should talk a little bit about that, and a little bit about why it seems to be so significant. And just to say a word about the story in the Haftorah is from the words of Yirmiyahu HaNavi, and there had been an agreement, there had been a bris, that the Jews, governed by the kings, the Kio, that they would set free their Avadim. And at first they did that, but then they ended up taking them back. And that is the source of tremendous criticism. Here Yirmiyahu comes down very hard on them for this. And it's actually conveyed that they're going to be in huge trouble, and that this is going to be the reason for Churban Yerushalayim. So once again, this mitzvah specifically, the concept of Avadim and how they're treated, and Shiluach Avadim, this really seems to take a very disproportionate place here. It's not only the beginning of Parsha Mishpatim, it's not only what's emphasized in the Haftorah, but in the Haftorah we see that it is blamed for Churban Yerushalayim. It's held up as one of the major failings of the Jews, that they're not careful about this principle. A part of the background also is that there is the siege going on, that this siege that started on Asara B'Teves. I think this year we had an opportunity to talk a little bit about the history of Asara B'Teves at that time. So that was when there was tremendous pressure on the people in Yerushalayim, and they were very scared then, and they freed the slaves at that point. Mitoch Ohel on the Haftorahs, you can read an article by Dr. Richard Hittery, where he goes through a lot of the history and the backgrounds of this whole story. But whatever it is, that during the time of the siege, so they were receptive to let the slaves go, and who wants to have to feed them when all this is going on anyway, and let the slaves go fight off the Babylonians. But they ended up taking them back. There was a brief glimpse of a possible Yeshua, and the Egyptian army was fighting the Babylonian army, and it looked like they might escape. And so at that time, then the Jews went back on their agreement, and they recaptured the slaves. And here's where you have Yirmiyahu giving his very emphatic words of disapproval. So just to, we won't go pasuk by pasuk, we'll just talk really thematically and highlight maybe a pasuk or two in the context. But it seems that our job is to look at a little bit about this concept of Eved Ivri and why it is highlighted. And clearly it's given special importance in the sense of its connection to Kabbalah Satorah. This is the first thing we're told right after Kabbalah Satorah, and it's clearly set up in the Chumash as a continuation from Parshas Yisro, and Rashi emphasizes that as well. And also in the Haftorah, there is a striking phrase. If you look at Pasuk Gimel, if you have it in front of you, that the idea of Ko Amar Hashem Elokei Yisrael Anofi Karati Vris Es Avoseichem B'Yom Hotzi Osam Mi'Eretz Mitzrayim Beis Avodim Lemor, that I have made a bris with your fathers to say, and the next pasuk tells us what it is, Mikei Shev Hashanim Tishalchu Ish Esachiv HaIvri Asher Yimocher Lecha V'Avodcha Sheish Hashanim V'Shilachto Chavshi Me'imach. So this is a clear reference to what we talk about in the beginning of the parsha, that you should send away the slaves eventually. But what's striking is in the first pasuk that we know, the pasuk in Gimel, when does this attributed to? When did this happen? So is that accurate? It seems like it's the time of Kabbalah Satorah. The fact that this is tied in, at least impressionistically, at least in some way, to the time of Yetzias Mitzrayim, is clearly meant to evoke a connection to that moment specifically, whether it's meant to convey that somehow at that time already there was this mitzvah, or whether that moment has to be integrated in our appreciation of the mitzvah. Whatever it is, it's an interesting point, and this is something that's expanded upon by Rabbi Rivlin in his Sefer on the Haftorahs, and we'll come back to that point. So it seems, just to talk about this whole concept as a whole, that the specific importance of Shiluach Avadim as a highlighted concept has implications both Bein Adam L'Makom and Bein Adam L'Chaveiro. That the mitzvah is very important to highlight for reasons in both categories. And in that sense also, it's an appropriate follow-up to the Aseres HaDibros, which has one of the two luchos for each concept, for each realm. So first, just to talk for a few minutes about Bein Adam L'Makom. So there is an emphasis that slavery, on the human sense, is a contradiction, or is an undermining of the idea that we are avadim l'Kadosh Baruch Hu. And we find this theme emphasized again and again, that God has freed us from slavery in Egypt so that we should be his avadim, and we are not meant to be avadim of anyone else. And that's a notion that you find in a few places. It's interesting here that it seems like whatever issue there is with being an Eved is addressed bilaterally, that we are not supposed to sell ourselves into Avdus, And we are not supposed to have others in our own avdus. We are not supposed to be on either side of the equation. And that's an interesting concept, because here they're different neschos. When the Torah tells us that we have to pierce the ear of the Eved who wants to continue his avdus, so he is being punished, so to speak, or being marked as someone who didn't listen, who heard and didn't pay attention. So there's different versions of what he didn't pay attention to. Is he didn't pay attention to Lo Signo because he ended up getting in trouble for stealing? Or is it the fact that he allowed himself to go into Avdus, and that is a violation of the din that's learned from the Pasuk in the Parshas Bahar, Kili B'nei Yisrael Avadim, that we are Avadim to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And the Gemara says, Avadai Heim Vlo Avadim Avadim, that we're meant to be servants to God and not servants to human beings. And apparently that's an issue for both. It's an issue for the one who would enter into Avdus, and it's an issue also for the one who would maintain the Eved. It's interesting also, the reference here, if you look at Pasuk Yitzayim, so it says, Lachein ko amar Hashem atem lo shematem elai. So God says, you didn't listen to me. Lekro drawer, to declare liberty. Ish lochiv, v'ish l'riyehu. Hinini kore lochem drawer, num Hashem. El hacherev, el hadever, v'el harov. V'nasati yeschem l'zava, l'chol mam l'chol sa'aras. So here, the way it's set up, Kadosh Baruch Hu says, you didn't listen to me. I told you to declare liberty and to set them free. So what's the punishment? Apparently, midah keneged midah, but in a somewhat inverse way. So normally, the midah keneged midah would mean you did this bad thing to someone else, we'll do it to you, or something like that. Here it's inverse, that because you didn't set the avadim free, HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, I'm going to send you free. I'm going to set you loose. And in the context, the Pasuk says, I'm going to send you loose to all the bad things, the cherev and the dever and the rav. But it's rooted in the idea that I'm going to set you free from avdus to me. And the Malbim comments that normally the relationship between Klal Yisrael and Kadosh Baruch Hu is one that invokes hashgacha, that God is looking after the Jews and keeping them away from happenstance, from mikra. And if that connection is broken, so then they are released to the wild, so to speak, and they are subject to all of these dangerous forces, and that's the consequence of not setting their own avadim free. So it's like an inverse midah keneged midah. You are being set free because you didn't set free, and in this case it's bad. So it highlights the tension that because we want to be avadim Hashem, therefore, we are not supposed to be avadim to anyone else or to make others our avadim. It's a very striking kind of inverse relationship. So because it applies in both senses of the word, so you find interesting implications. You find that as far as the master is concerned, that he's limited in how he can maintain ownership of this eved. And that means, for example, that there is a quantitative limit that he has to set him free in the seventh year. And there's also qualitative limitations, the degree of how hard he can work him and the conditions. So, for example, probably familiar that the Gemara Maseches Kedushin on Daf Chaf says that one has to share his good resources together with his Eved. And Tosfos quotes Yerushalmi that goes even further, that let's say you only have one good pillow between you and the Eved, so the Eved gets the good pillow. Which is an interesting idea, especially as the Maharam Shif comments in his commentary to Bava Metzia, that isn't that against the din? That the Gemara says that as much as we believe in chesed and sharing and the like, but if there's only one, Chayecha Kodmeh, right? The Gemara says that if you are traveling in the desert, the opinion of Rabbi Akiva, and you only have one bottle of water, so you keep it, and you don't have to share it with the other person, because Chayecha Kodmeh, maintaining your own life, takes precedence. So here to say, when we talk about chesed normally, so we mean that you should share, we mean that you should give of what you have. But to say that if there's only one, you have to give it to the other and you lose out, that's normally not what we require. So it comes out, paradoxically, that there's a greater chiyuv towards the Eved than there is to another person who's not an Eved, in this case at least, in this example.
Just to clarify, the Eved that we're talking about now, is that Eved Ivri still?
Yeah.
Not so Eved Kenani?
Yeah, still talking about Eved Ivri. But the concept is still very strange that that should be more than somebody who's Ben Chorin. So this is a discussion also in the Sefer, you know, Beparsha of Rabbi Heschel Reisman. And he notes within this Maram Shif that this is apparently to emphasize just how important it is that you have this sense of careful and compassionate treatment, because you have to have limits on what this avdus means. We mentioned that it's bilateral, so there's an obligation on the odom, there's an obligation on the eved, so to speak. So we find halachos that are based on this. So there are all kinds of limitations when you talk about a poel, when you talk about somebody who works for somebody else, but as opposed to an omen is a little bit of an ambiguous term, but as opposed to a kablon, where somebody agrees that they're going to do a specific task, a poel is somebody who sells his time, says, I'm going to work for you for this much an hour, this much a day. And the Torah was concerned about that, as Chazal understood it, that once you sell your time, so you are too close to an Eved. That's too much of a comparison to somebody who was a slave. And there were limitations, so you find in the poskim that there are limitations to how absolutely you can do that, to how long you can do that for. And that's all an extension of this idea of Kili B'nai Yisrael Avadim, Avadim La Avadim La Avadim. And that's also connected to the notion of Poel Yochel Achzer B'chatzi Hayom. That the Gemara says that somebody who's in a Poel relationship is allowed to quit in the middle of the day. And that also seems to be a correction against the notion of Avdus, that you have to be able to pull out, because otherwise we're afraid that it makes you too close to an Eved. It's a fascinating concept, which seems to be something that transcends normal Ben Adam L'Chavero, that this is not just something that is a benefit for the worker, but it also creates prohibitions on what the worker is allowed to do to himself, what he's allowed to commit to himself. It seems to be less about giving him benefits as it is than it is to protect his relationship with the Kodesh Baruch Hu and not allow that to be conflicted by any avdus to a human being. Marietta. So, in any event, so the idea that this mitzvah, this concept of Shiluach Avadim is particularly important on a Ben Adam L'Makom level, it seems to be connected to all of this. That if Parshas Yisro is we get the Torah and we're given the commandments and Anochi Hashem Elokecha, and we're told that we are avadim of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, so now Parshas Mishpatim starts off with the idea that we can't compromise that relationship by maintaining an avdus relationship on a human level. And therefore it impacts the Kol HaTorah Kula concept, because our whole commitment to HaKadosh Baruch Hu is affected by it, and therefore it's a theme that's relevant to the entire body of the Torah. But, of course, it's also relevant on a Ben Adam L'Chaveru level. And that even if we focus on that particular realm, we also find that this mitzvah seems to have a unique front row seat. And indeed, like we say, Parshas Mishpatim specifically, by name and by much of its theme, is devoted to the interpersonal realm. And the idea that we start off with Eved as the opening idea is interesting. And the Chizkuni and others have this idea as well, emphasizes that while we are still fresh from the experience of our own avdus, so we have to remember what that means, and we have to commit not to imposing that on others. And here you have a philosophical axiom here, that the importance of empathy the idea that you are able to identify with the suffering of others and therefore don't impose that on others or do what you can to relieve others of that suffering is a major foundation of all ben adam l'chaveru. So here I mentioned B'toch Ohel before, so in the Haftorah volume, Rabbi Dr. Hidri talks about this, but also in the Parsha volume, Rabbi Yonah Ries has an article where he also emphasizes the theme that this is an opening story, this is an opening part of the Parsha of Mitzvos Ben Adam L'Chaveru, because this kind of empathy is crucial in order to be able to fully internalize one's obligation towards others. The Litzker Rav and the Aznayim LaTorah here in the Parsha, so he notes that you might think that this is the last thing we need to hear about, that right after being released from slavery, to remind us to be careful how we treat Avadim, you might think this is the last thing we need to hear about. But the truth is, as he points out, human nature is very often, unfortunately, showing us that that's not the case. It's not the last thing we need to hear about. Because human nature is that even if we have unfortunately suffered in the past, that once that's over, we can very quickly forget about what that was like and all too easily impose that on others. And therefore, it's important to have that reminder. It's important to emphasize now, while it's still fresh, that this has got to be a part of our awareness and this is how we have to relate to others, to make sure to have that in our consciousness davka at that time. There is a tendency, the pasuk says, Eved ki imloch, when you have somebody who was an Eved and then he somehow obtains a position of power, so he often goes overboard with that. That's the reversal of circumstances, even if it's not really actual malucha, but it's even any kind of minor position of authority. So very often a person who was once in a submissive situation and gets some power can very quickly forget what it was like to be in that submissive position. And therefore maybe it's especially necessary right now to say you have to remember your experience of avdus, and that's got a factor in how you relate to people, and that's a constant theme in the Torah. The Torah again and again saying that you should remember that you were avadim, and that's a part of the message, and that's a part of our backstory. It's a part of our constant consciousness. So presumably, that's also what the Haftorah is getting at when the Haftorah connects the bris to the day that we left Mitzrayim. Doesn't necessarily mean chronologically that that's when the tzivoy was given, but that the mentality of the tzivoy is informed by the day that we left Mitzrayim, and that even if there wasn't a specific tzivoy at that time, but the experience of leaving Mitzrayim is a part of what creates the mechayev, a part of what creates this bris, and that's incredibly important as well. That's incredibly important as part of the consciousness. It's interesting to note that in Parshas Va'era, the end of the first Aliyah of Parshas Va'era, so the Torah tells us that Moshe and Aaron are sent to Paro to command him to release the slaves, but the beginning of the pasuk says, Vayitzaven el b'nei Yisrael, el Paro, that they convey the commandment to the Jews. So what's pshat on that? They're commanding Paro to let the Jews go. Why does the pasuk say he commands the Jews and Paro? So there are different interpretations of that. Some say it's because there were Jews who also had slaves, and they also had to be commanded. But the Yerushalmi in Rosh Hashanah says they were commanded regarding this general mitzvah of Shiluach Avadim. So why is that mentioned then specifically? So some explain, I think maybe the Nitziv says like this, I think Rabbi Simon Shlita has an essay about this in his Imre Baruch, if I remember correctly, I forgot who he quotes, that even though this is a mitzvah that was only going to be relevant later, but nonetheless, it was crucial that that moment be seized. That that time, while the Jews were still in their own avdus, and they can identify with what it's like, so the commandment is given then in order to make sure that it sticks in the proper way. And it's very striking if you look at that Yerushalmi, the Yerushalmi that says that that's the pshat, that the Jews at that time were commanded on Shiluach Avadim. So the Yerushalmi quotes this Haftarah, quotes our Haftarah for Parshas Mishpatim as the source that failing in this area leads to the big tsaris of Klal Yisrael, and highlights that as an explanation of that pasuk in Vayeres. It's very striking. So it's also interesting. More?
I'm sorry, I apologize if it was already covered, but then how come we don't have an explicit pasuk or any kind of Quran saying don't have slaves?
Because it seems to be that it could be necessary. And you know, it gets into the whole question of slavery and humanity and the long issue that we've had with this. But it seems to be that there are times in history where it's the least bad option. So to say that it has to be absolutely impossible, so that we're not able to necessarily say. And there's a lot written about this, and there's a lot to consider. I know Rabbi Gamliel Shmalo has an article about this in the Torah Matter Journal. It's a topic that deserves a lot of attention. But without going into all of the aspects of it, it seems to be that there was a possibility that it may sometimes be the least bad option. But we have to remember that it's never the ideal, and that whatever can reduce it is necessary. It's also striking, Rav Rivlin, in his comments on the Haftorah. So he notes that the Haftorah often uses, as we saw already a little bit, often uses forms of the word dror. Dror meaning liberty. And in the Parsha, here, Mishpatim, we talk about chofshi. We talk about chofesh, that being free. This is two different words, to be chofshi and liberty. And dror appears in Parsha's Bahar, across from dror la'aretz l'chol yoshveh. And that's a special shout out to the people in the room from Philadelphia, that this is what's written on the Liberty Bell, as Rav Schechter always points out from his childhood in Philadelphia. He would go to visit the Liberty Bell and see the pasuk. So the declaration of liberty is a very resonant phrase. And Rav Rivlin discusses what's the difference between chafshi and dror, as it's used here. So he makes a few observations. Says that the idea of chafshi is used together with a word meaning shlichus, is you will send him to chafshus, and dror generally is used more with kriya, with the declaration. And he goes on to explain that chafshi is used when talking about an individual, that an individual slave is sent chafshi, the master sends him chafshi, then you find that kind of usage. While dror is used in the collective sense, like we find in Bahar, we cross from dror la'aretz l'chol yoshveh. And he explains that it's a much more expansive term, that one has to wonder, why is it that in the context of Yovel, the Torah says l'chol yoshveh to all of the inhabitants? It's not relevant to all of the inhabitants. How many of the inhabitants are going to be avadim? So even if you want to say, Pnei Yeshua raises this question, and it says, even if you want to say that this goes back to our initial point, that the issue with Avdus is not just on the Eved, it's on the Adon as well, so you want to include them in the reference to Chol Yoshveh, but still, how much of the population is that? Okay, so you count all the Avadim, and all the people who have Avadim, still presumably that's not that many people, so why do we talk about Chol Yoshveh in that pasuk? And he explains that liberty is a much broader concept, and I don't know if the Founding Fathers were aware of this whole vort, but if they were, they probably would put it twice in the Liberty Bell, or they would probably emphasize it even more, that this issue of avdus and chofshi, that's relevant on an individual level. But when you talk about liberty as a collective term, you can't have liberty if there's avdus at all. So it's specifically in that context of Yovel, rather than in our parsha, we're talking about individual avadim being set free on their own count, their own 7-year count. But in the Haftorah and in the Parshas Bahar, talking about all the Avadim being set free at once. So liberty requires, liberty on a societal level, requires that there not be the Avdus at all. That it's not just about this one relationship between this Eved and this Adon, but on a societal level, that it that there be a declaration of liberty. So therefore, the usage of sending someone chavshi is one thing, while declaring liberty to society is a different thing. So again, I think the founding fathers maybe would have found that even more inspiring, but it also highlights the fact, as we know, that in America, this has been, and society in the world overall, this has been an ongoing process, that this is what was declared at the time of the founding of the nation, but it's taken a few centuries for it to really be realized in the fullest sense. The idea that injustice to some is injustice to all has taken a while and is still a work in progress. But that is certainly the aspiration of our nation here in America, and the Jewish nation, and the world as a whole, and that's a part of the whole message, the Ben Adam L'Chaveiro message of the Parsha and the Haftorah. I should just also mention that we have an interesting structure to the Haftorah, that it goes backwards, that we read from Perek Lamed Dalet, and then after, at the end, we include two psukim from Lamed Gimel. I have to go backwards here because I'm using Tanakh. But we add psukim here that are very well known. Just find it. Yeah, from the end of the parak, we use psukim that are well known. That here God says that if not for my bris, day and night, heaven and earth, just as I have done that, so the pasuk goes on. Gam zera Yaakov v'dovid Avdi Yamas Mikachas Mizaro Shlim El Zera Avram Yitzchak V'Yaakov. So too, I'm not going to reject Yaakov and David, and I'm not going to ever fail to take rulers from his descendants, from Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, and I will bring their fortunes back and take them back in love. So this pasuk is well known because it's often quoted in a interpretation that you find in Chazal in a few places, that because of the Torah, that's why the world exists. I'm lo brisi yom v'layla, chukah shemayim v'aretz lo samti. I wouldn't have put the world into place were it not for the Torah. Elsewhere in Chazal is a focus on mila, yet elsewhere is a focus on mamados, which may be the korbanos some more. But the notion that there is a contingency there, that because of the Torah, at least that's why the world was put into place, and without that, the world is in big trouble. But the Pashtus is a little different, as Rav Levin emphasizes, that why do we read this psukim at all in the Haftorah? That the reason we don't want to just leave the Haftorah as it is because in Perek Lamed Dalet, where most of the Haftorah is from, it ends off on a very scary note. It ends off on a Puranius note, and we don't want to end things like that. So we need to add to it. But there are other ways of doing it. Why do we go back to the previous Perek in order to close with that? So he notes that the message is that it's talking about the Nitzchius of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that God's commitment to continue the bris is being contrasted with the behavior of the Jews in the Haftorah, that the Jews were not faithful to the agreement that they made. They said they're going to set the slaves free, and then they went and took them back. And God is saying, I'm not that way, that I have made a bris with the Jewish people, and I'm going to continue to uphold it. And that's supposed to be a message to us, both of Musar and inspiration. And again, connecting back to the theme of the Parsha, maybe let's say the Parshios, if we see this as a bridge between Yisro and Mishpatim, the ongoing bris that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has promised, we're both Alpi Derech HaDrosh, that it's a reference to the Torah being the reason for the existence of the world, and also HaKadosh Baruch Hu's ongoing commitment to it, all of that major theme of what we are encountering here. And just to close for a few more minutes, to say a little bit about the beginning of Mishpatim as relevant to our Limbud this year, you know, at the beginning of the Zman, just to parallel now the beginning of the second semester with the beginning of the first semester. So day one, we spoke a little bit about the special opportunity that we have to learn Bava Kamma, which is the entree into Nezikin, and the Gemara says that if one wants to be a chassid, he should study words of Nezikin, he should study the concepts of Nezikin. The Gemara also says in Bava Basra that one wants to be smart, should learn things like Nezikin, but we're also more interested in the idea that if one wants to be a chassid, if one wants to be pious, so then one should study these concepts, that the sensitivity to Ben Adam L'Chavero and all of the consequences of our actions is tied in a fundamental way to our ability to be pious, to be religious people. And that's true on many levels, but it's also striking that if you look at the beginning of Parshas Mishpatim, so if you look at the Rashi's in the beginning of Mishpatim, so Rashi highlights the equal importance of Mishpatim, that the fact that the Parsha begins with Vav, Ve'ela HaMishpatim, to show the connection to Parshas Yisro, that Ma'elu Misina, Efe'elu Misina, just like everything we read last week is from Sinai, so too this week's Parsha is also from Sinai. But there is a very striking Rashi also, maybe pun intended, that it sounds like Rashi is telling us that Moshe Rabbeinu wanted to go on strike. It sounds like Moshe Rabbeinu wanted to somehow renegotiate his contract or something, because Rashi tells us that when the pasuk says Asher Tosim Lefnehem, these are the Mishpatim you shall place in front of them. Now Asher Tosim Lefnehem, says Rashi, God says to Moshe, Moshe, don't think that you can take off here. Don't think that you can just say things very briefly and not really work. Here you have to Asher Tosim Lefnehem, you have to explain these things very clearly. So what is going on there? What is that Rashi about? And it seems that this is reflective of another idea, and just to give it a little bit of explanation, you know, there is a story that a man once came to the Chafetz Chaim's house, and he said he was interested in buying all the Sfarim of the Chafetz Chaim, with one exception. Chafetz Chaim doesn't want that one. So Chafetz Chaim is a little taken aback, you know, the one he's named after. So he says, well, what's the pshat? And the man says, listen, you've written a lot of wonderful books, and I would love to read them and live by them. So you wrote the Mishnah Berurah, Shabbos, Tefillah, I think I can handle that. And you wrote about Karbanos, okay, it's not going to impact my life so much. But you write a book saying that we shouldn't talk badly about others. I'm out there in the dog-eat-dog world of business. I'm a businessman, I'm involved in a lot of intense stuff. I'm never going to be able to live up to what this Sefer requested me. So, unsurprisingly, the Chafetz Chaim didn't accept that objection, and he said he should buy it anyway. And he quoted Rabbi Shaul Salanter as saying that this Sefer is worthwhile even if the only consequence, even if the only impact of this Sefer being written is that one Jew reads it and what? And changes his behavior, stops speaking Lashon Hara. Says, even if one Jew reads it and sighs. What does that mean, he sighs? He says, ah, if only I could keep these rules. But I can't. Okay, moving on. That'll be enough. So why is that enough? You know, normally we say, mutav shushogin v'alyu mazidin, that if somebody is not going to keep a certain halacha, it's better that he shouldn't be told about it, because then he'll become a chote b'mezid. So why is the Chafetz Chaim here saying that even if one's not going to keep these halachas, it would still be worthwhile reading it and feeling bad about that? So I think the pshat is that the Rambam in Shmona Prakim, his introduction to Pirkei Avos, the Rambam comments that even though there is an idea in Chazal, Yalkut Shimoni and elsewhere, there's an idea that a person does not have to say, I'm uninterested in non-kosher food. If a person to say, I have no interest in eating treif, it's disgusting to me. You don't have to say that. It's perfectly fine to acknowledge that it's very attractive, that when you walk past the McDonald's and you see the sign, two burgers, fries, a Coke, and a free car for 98 cents, that's pretty appealing. It's fine to acknowledge that, but Gzeres HaMelech, I'm going to stay away. So it's fine to say like that. Your whole life, you could live 120 years and say, I find non-kosher food to be very, very interesting, but I'm still not going to do it because Gzeres HaMelech. So the Rambam writes in Shmona Prakim, says, it's not true by everything. He says that when it comes to the chukim, okay, so fine. So you don't have to relate to it. You can say, I observe it because it's Gzeres HaMelech. But when it comes to the mishpatim, when it comes to what we call the mitzvos sichlios, the mitzvos that we think we can relate to, that we think we understand what they're about, so then the Rambam says there is an ideal that you will try to get your personality in sync, that you will not only not hurt people because God tells you not to, but you will also appreciate that you don't want to hurt people, that you want people to be well off. So that is a whole different perspective. So it tells us that when it comes to the mishpatim, there's an additional angle here, that learning them has an added component, that it's meant to impact on our personality in a way that is particularly suited for this area. And maybe that's what the Chafetz Chaim was getting at when he said that it's kedai to read about the Chofetz Lashon Hara, even if you're not going to observe it, because it's different than other areas of halacha where we might just say mutav shushovi. Here, even if you're not going to follow it, the principles you'll relate to, and that will have an impact on your personality and creating the kind of Eved Hashem you're supposed to be. So perhaps that's true here as well. And the Rashiv of Karen Biavner of Goldvich Taz, in one of his sichos, that's something like that, if I remember correctly, is the pshat on this Rashi about Asher Tosim Lefnehem. That there was a little bit of a conflict here, how to do things. That Moshe was a little worried about teaching these principles too clearly or too much detail to the Jewish people, because the attitude you have sometimes that people might have towards these concepts of an Adam Lechavero is to think, oh, they're all intellectual svaras, and just like every society has civil regulations, so we can figure this out on our own, and not really to relate to it as a mitzvah, not really to relate to it as something that is religious. So Moshe was inclined maybe to try to preserve the mystery of this a little bit and to not let people think that they understand it more than they do. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu says to him, no, don't do that. And Adarabba, that here's where you have to do it the most. Here's where you have to really set out the details and where they have to really learn what's going on, because it's through that that they have an even greater potential to understand the Dvar Hashem. And that's something that we have to seize that opportunity. So again, we are very privileged this year to be learning Bava Kamma, which really, as well as any other Masechta, gives us that opportunity to really study Dvar Hashem in a way that we can connect to a little bit more, and that has added impact on our personalities. And I'll just close by mentioning, I believe Ben Yonah says something similar in the beginning of Pirkei Avos, or the first Mishnah in Pirkei Avos, tells us, have him asunim b'din, which we normally translate as we should be deliberate in matters of judgment when you're making a decision about the people. So you have to be very careful and thoughtful. And that's certainly true. But think of Ben Yonah says also on a different level that if you want to understand the Kadosh Baruch Hu, if you want to try to understand his ways, understand his midos and his message to our world, so the most, in a sense, there is a particular profit to be had, there is particular accomplishment to be had in studying the concepts of din, in studying Bava Kamma, in studying these areas where we have more access to what's going on. That brings a special potential towards understanding the Ribbono Shel Olam, and therefore having Mesunim B'din, it's always worth contemplating and pondering these principles of din. So we are very fortunate our entire year to have this Masechta to study, but especially this Shabbos. So this is the Shabbos where we're going to hear our whole Masechta read back to us, and all these concepts reemphasized. So we should make sure to take advantage of that, make sure to use the opportunity to think as much as we can about all of the messages that the Parsha is reminding us about our Limud all year long. And this extra opportunity that we have this year to hear them Haftorah for Parshas Mishpatim, having learned a little bit about it today, and now the rare opportunity to actually hear the Haftorah from Mishpatim on Parshas Mishpatim, and allow that to re-emphasize these themes. We should take as much advantage as we can of all this opportunity, and to allow these concepts to really sink in and to define our personalities. So I wish you all a wonderful Shabbos. It should be only good things, and we will daven mincha. Who is our volunteer?
Okay, Jeff, you got up first.